Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Why on earth would Julian Wilson want to punch B. Durbridge in the face? What's his closest brush with the law? Who is the tightest person he knows? Julian answers these questions and more in the latest Dirty Water podcast. In less flippant matters, he explains how age 15 he became the main breadwinner for his family after his mother's cancer diagnosis and both his brother's longboarding careers evaporated. On the surface, the Hollywood good looks, the model wife, the pipe master titles, and the million-dollar contracts makes his life look pretty fucking goddamn easy. But that's a tricky family dynamic and a burden that perhaps many fans were unaware of. Along with Toledo and Geordie Smith, I'd argue that he's the best surfer of his generation, never to have won a world title. Though, as he explains it, given his Noosa longboarding and lid-riding background, that he was a contender at all is worth respecting. There's some chat on the Mick Fanning Shark incident at Jay Bay, timely, given where we're at right now. Who's going to win the world title? A bit on his new business and life off tour. I talked to Julian by Zoom from his loft in Meriwether in mid-July. I'm Ben Mundy, and I hope you enjoy it.
Okay. No, now.
You're online.
Get on it.
Yeah, we're good. All right. Okay, and with Julian Wilson, all the way from Newcastle, Australia, my hometown. Oh, how is Newcastle, mate? How's it going living there?
It's going good, Money. It's it's brisk at the moment. It's winter brisk, but the south swells are hitting and waves are plenty, so no complaints.
Oh, good. How long have you been in Newcastle now?
4.5 years.
Yeah, right.
My daughter's just 4.5 now, so we moved a couple of weeks after she was born.
Only another 15 years to go, mate, and you'll get that local status out there at ladies or so.
15?
You reckon?
I think I'm too late.
Too late? You just never get it.
I'm not expecting it.
Don't want it.
They can have it.
You're a localism's a thing of the past anyway, isn't it? Hopefully.
I'll get my surfs at Pogos.
Yeah. All right. Well, I thought I'd start off with a little questionnaire to get the ball rolling. I thought we just might make it a little bit formalised and a few stepping off points. So I'm just going to hit you with some questions, Jules. If you want to be honest and open. Don't hold them back, please. Now you're off
to my best.
Don't have to You don't have to toe the line. You run your own business. So we'll see what see what you say. My first question is, when were you happiest?
Wedding day.
Ah.
No word of a lie. Yeah, wedding day was the happiest day of my life, for sure.
Where was that? Where'd you have it?
On the Sunshine Coast, just at Yandina Station, which is 15 minutes from the beach at Coolum, where I grew up, on an old cattle station. And it was just the one and only time in your life where you invite the people that mean the most to you and your partner to one place to celebrate a very joyful thing. It was just an epic occasion. Wow.
Bloody romantic. Oh, that'll give you a point straight off the bat. Don't worry about that. So that's good. switching quite severely, what's the scaredest you've ever been in the ocean?
Scaredest I've ever been in the ocean is no doubt I sat in the channel for 5.5 hours with a bit of a hangover. It got slapped out of me real quick in the Code Red swell in Tahiti, my first year on tour. And I thought I watched Bruce Irons die in front of me. I thought I watched Nathan Fletcher die in front of me. Thought I was going to die a couple of times, especially Nathan Fletcher's wave when all the boats looked like they were going to get caught inside on top of me and CJ and Kersey and stuff that was sitting in the channel watching on our boards. That was the scariest day in the ocean by a country mile. It was just out of this world.
And so you guys were just on your boards, like the whole time, even just watching it, were you just always just searching for the horizon, like just thinking you're going to get closed out on the whole time?
Yeah, I think there's like five big yellow buoys that have been in that channel for a long time. And like most days you know that that first buoy up in like handles pretty big and you're safe at that first buoy. And but this day in particular, like the last buoy was, you'd almost treat that like the first buoy, which they're like 150 meters apart, almost like such a big distance apart. And that was the indicator of being too far in, was like the furthest one out, which was just because there's like a right hander on the other side of Chokes as well that it meets and sort of close out. It was it was really west that swell as well for how big it was. And there was two people that got sucked over the falls right next to me and Kersey and CJ, which was so gnarly. So just see them come up and their faces and like getting sucked back on like a 15-foot closeout on dry reef at Chopes was death-defying, like terrifying. Maya Gabrera, that was probably the scariest thing I've ever witnessed live. I thought she died. She went a small wave just to try and get her feet in the wax. And it was the silliest thing that could have ever happened. She kicked out and there was like a 10 wave, 20 foot set behind it. And she got sucked over by the first one. And then she had two life vests on. And she was in the impact zone in between the end of Chopes and then that right closeout. Like she was in that impact zone, not getting pushed in, out. And she was just the first like three waves that she came up from and everyone was freaking out and no skis could get to her. She'd pop up right before the next lip would be coming over and we'd be looking over and she'd just be holding on to her two life jackets and she'd come up and she'd just be like, oh, like as if she'd seen a ghost. And then by the fourth one, she was like out of it. And then there was a fifth one. And it was like, oh my gosh, she's like we're watching her die and we can't do anything about it. It was so heavy. And then Poto got her after the fifth wave. Like Poto was right there, who's probably the most experienced jet ski driver that you could have in that situation. And he couldn't get in there until the fifth wave. grabbed her, pulled her up. She had blood coming out of her ear. She wasn't with it. And we're just like, okay, that was just like, we just watched someone die in front
of
us.
Was there any chat about you boys going out and surfing it? Like, I mean, obviously CJ and Kersey, or even yourself.
No, we sat there. We sat there for 5.5 hours, and not at one point did we look at each other and go, oh, I wonder if we could get on a rope or whatever. But I paddled back after that 5.5 hours and after everything I watched. And then Laurie Towner was buzzing around from the lagoon. He was towing Dean Bowen into some, and I don't know what happened, what came over me, but I asked Laurie to get me a wave, and I ended up on the back of the ski and borrowed Hippo's tow board and ended up getting the scariest wave of my life that day after all that.
Oh, good work.
I think it was just like seeing someone, like a good friend that I was like sort of had this false confidence, like, oh, he'll look after me. But
you know, yeah, Loz will look after me.
Yeah.
Just Loz and Bowen.
Stupidly, Bowen actually ended up being the one that towed me into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on quickly again. What's your most embarrassing moment?
Most embarrassing in the water or just most embarrassing?
No, mate, just anywhere, just in life.
Most embarrassing moment was in primary school. It was like right before, just after lunch, and I had to go to the bathroom, got excused to go to the bathroom, and I was just about to step foot back in the classroom and a crow just took a big shit on my head, and I was in like grade six, and I just grabbed my bag and failed.
Straight home.
And I was out of there. Always had like this massive, like a proper one all through my hair. I had like white blonde hair at that time too, and got me so good. And I was just about to step foot back in the classroom, and it was like grade six, and I just went, nah, I can't handle this, and snuck by the window, grabbed my backpack and peaced out.
Went home as quickly as the crow flies, straight back. You would have been called crowboy or something for probably another 20 years.
You may just not good timing.
Who's the funniest person you know?
Funniest person I know, Wilco, Matty Wilco.
He's pretty consistent, funny, isn't he? Have you seen much of him, mate?
Even when I'm not. No, I don't see much of him. He's up in Byron and got his first child now too, and that sort of takes over a lot of our time, as you know. But we still chat a bit. We talking about going to Tassie this year for a golf tournament together, a charity golf tournament. So that'll be a hoot. It'll be pretty funny.
Who's the tightest person you know?
Well, first one that comes to mind is probably Kai Otten, just because he was just renowned, like, by everyone, on tour. And but he owned it. He did not. He doesn't.
Every dollar in the prison.
Doesn't care one bit. But probably definitely Otto. Always complaining about who's paying for dinner and who's shouting him and. It's funny.
Tight prick. What's your most treasured possession?
My health.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, good. Okay. It's very smart. Very smart. What
the core
is
of it? Yep.
The most expensive thing you bought apart from property?
Car.
Oh yeah, what'd you get?
Yes, been through a few cars in my short lifetime career. But yeah, I've spent a bit on cars. I don't know.
What's your closest brush in the law?
closest brush with the law, I was...
You've been pretty good.
About 16. I was about 16 at a house party, and I was in a very private area, like in the bush, no one around, took a leak, came back out to where the party was, at, where the house was, and the police had pulled up to stop the party happening, and I just got targeted. Just this police officer across the road just goes, "You come here," and then straight in the paddy wagon. He didn't have a reason at first. He just was like herding everyone up from the party, and I don't know. I think he knew, might have known who I was and wanted to make an example of me. But yeah, I got put in the paddy wagon, and then I got like a public nuisance ticket, and then I had to go to the police station a couple of days. Mum drove me to the police station a couple of days later, and I got an absolute serving off the police officer in there.
Pricks, I suppose even that's quite young, even though when you're only 16, to have sort of been targeted for who you were. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty of a, probably a bit of a lesson learned, was it? Like, you know, like, even though you hadn't done anything wrong, just because you're at even that young age, which you shouldn't be really dealing that sort of shit then, do you think?
Yes, a small town on the Sunshine Coast, and we're all on the beach, and I guess, yeah, it's, you know, I had a bit of a name for myself from a very young age. But I still, to this day, Mum won't admit it, but I think I got in trouble that night, and then Mum definitely teed up the extra follow-up conversation at the cop station.
Right.
But damn, it set me in a good place for then going to travel the world on my own, and just, yeah, like, you know, always being aware of, you know, the law, and just it rattled me massively, and I've been pretty clean since.
All right, now this is a quick game. I'm going to give you three people, Julian, and ask you one to be your best man, one for two, you have to go on a 2-week holiday with, and one you got to metaphorically punch in the face, right? I'm going to give you Fanning, Callanan, and B. Durbidge. One's got to be your best man. You got to punch one in the face metaphorically. Or you can do it literally. It's up to you. And wow. One, yeah, 2-week holiday.
I'd take Mick to be my best man, Ryan on a 2-week holiday, and Bede I'd punch in the face because he's that nice of a bloody human that he's probably the only one that would cough it, not belt me back or something.
Yeah. But yeah, yeah, I deserve that. But tough decision. All right.
Yeah.
Last one. Yeah, what keeps you awake at night, Julian? I probably know the answer to this question.
Well, there's a very obvious answer, but probably too obvious. Obviously, yeah, two young kids. But
young kids.
Probably the one thing that gets me going the most is a good swell forecast still. Yes.
Keeps you pumped.
There's a good swell forecast, and, yeah, just – it always looks different. Doesn't matter if it looks the same. It's still going to be different when the swell shows up, and some locations are different to others. I don't know. A good swell forecast kicked up at night.
That's a good segue, because there's a good forecast coming for Jay Bay, isn't there, this week? And you probably noticed, you've probably seen that. What's your thoughts on that now, that when there's a good forecast coming, there's a comp on, obviously, you might be aware of, and you're not there, what's your general vibe on that right now? How are you feeling about, is there any FOMO right now about that, about missing events, missing good waves and places like Jay Bay, or you dealt with that?
Yeah, I haven't I saw a couple of small things, like just I think Griffin posted something today, just saying, hinting about a good forecast. I haven't seen the forecast. Yeah, I don't know. Had some incredible swells at JB.
You're not missing.
Not at the moment.
No.
Not at the moment. No. Like just. Yeah, I enjoy watching the comps. I still watch a lot of it, and I enjoy that side of it. But just yeah, I'm not really missing the travel and the separation from family and stuff at the moment. Kind of is keeping me pretty happy and settled. And just had a really sick swell in Fiji just the other week, and waves are pumping here at the moment. It'll be interesting. I don't know if I like might get to the end of this year and be like, oh shit, I'm too competitive for this, you know, to step into this so young. But at the moment, I've made the decision, and I'm just really trying to appreciate it, because it might not be for a long time, or it could be forever. I don't know, but just trying to enjoy it.
And with JB, obviously, it's a boring conversation for you, but obviously the incident with Mick sort of brings back memories. Is that ever still playing? Ever playing your mind? Is that an experience that you rethink about when JB's on? Do you perhaps think about it more, or is it something that comes back in your mind at various times, or it's sort of just one of those things you don't
dwell on? Not really. No, it doesn't really take JB for me to think about it. But I think ever since I've been more sensitive to like what feels sharky, like whether it's like where a certain wave is or the time of day, or I've definitely been more sensitive to like and easily scared by sharks since triggers it.
Yeah.
But I don't associate like watching epic JB or watching clips of JB with that incident. I don't ever really feel that spooked at JB, even though what happened, just because of how close it is to the rocks and just the beauty of the wave sort of captivates me. It doesn't trigger not as much as some of the slabs around here and the deep water drop-offs and, you know, super earlies and late arvos and murky, like those things can get me going. And I think I'm more sensitive since watching that go down and being a part of it.
Yeah, all right. And who's going to win the world title then? If you've been watching a bit of it, who you got your money on? Oh, who do you want to win? Say again, Italo or Toledo?
Who do I want to win? I want Ethan Ewing to win the world title. Definitely.
And he's good enough.
But do I think he's good enough?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think he's enough to win, Nathan?
I think he has an extra 10% on, like, if he's really on with his rail game. I think Toledo is probably the only one, like, in softer waves like trestles that would really match him on the rail game. But I almost think Ethan's got an extra little something there. But obviously he gets, you know, doesn't have the wild card of, like, excellent scores from Ayres, which is like, you know, which brings your batting average up massively because you can take off on a mediocre wave needing an excellent score, where Ethan can get boxed in a bit competitively. But for sure he can, you know, trestles is 6 foot and mostly rights, and just like, you know, when Luke Egan won, I could see Ethan winning on a day like that. You know, and if he's on for that day, it's a world title now.
Would that assert you? I mean, obviously the world title. Geez, you've answered some questions for me about the world title over the years and the fact that you didn't win one. I suppose Ethan's a bit like you in terms of absolute quality surfing, rail game, everything that you need to win a world title. But obviously it's having it and winning it's a very different thing. But do you reckon the finals sort of situation, the way that works now, would have been better for you in terms of having a one-day sort of grand final kind of feel? Or, you know, would that have... helped you, you reckon?
Oh, I would have had way more chances. I mean, obviously I would have had way more chances, just had to, yeah, be top five and know that it was just coming down to the one day. Like, that's massively different than coming in third in the title race or second in the title race and, you know, you got to get second or first at Pipe to try and win the title, and the guy winning has to, you know, bomb out early or whatever scenario. Like, it's definitely that opportunity is there for way more, is obviously there for a lot more people more often.
Yeah.
The way that it's set up.
Less of a grind, I suppose, as well, the year. Was that something that you think held you back, like trying to have concentration for that whole time or maintaining whatever it was you need to win, like for the whole 12 months? If you can do it for 6 months, would that have, I don't know if you thought about it.
I reckon I always needed the whole year, to be honest. I felt like I could get a quarterfinals or better at every location. That was my goal, to like be able to know that I was capable of that at each of the stops. And I felt like I got to that place maybe like 2017. Felt like I was like, okay, each of these locations, I'm competitive. I could quarters or better. And if I do that, I'm a serious contender. I can win a title. And I had a good run around that time. But yeah, I think like, yeah, to put my finger on it, I couldn't. I felt like for me, I was in my career, I felt like I always felt personally like I was overachieving to even be in that conversation, like just coming from where I came from, how I grew up, you know, just the whole thing.
So keep going. Sorry, mate.
Oh, and yeah, just like, oh, you know, it wasn't until people were saying and expecting something big like that from me did I then go, oh, you know, if I can find 10% more, like I could, you know, maybe that's something that I can really achieve. And I turned into becoming, you know, that person that wanted to win a world title for 5 years in a row.
And when you talk about that upbringing, that what was that a difficult? Why did you think that put you at a disadvantage? But why do you think that when you were young, or when that upbringing was, people probably don't realize exactly how you grew up. But why did you think? It almost sounded like that you didn't think you deserved to be there because, how tough you had it. But yeah. What do you think about your upbringing?
It wasn't a tough upbringing at all. It was the opposite. But the expectation to be like a top level shortboard competitive surfer was not, I didn't grow up in that environment. I grew up like a part of the longboarding club at Noosa, and that was our once a month competition as a family, was doing the Noosa Mal Club. And I never...
You weren't hothoused.
No, I never, like, I actually was never comfortable going to the Gold Coast because that was, like, the shortboard, like, very competitive environment, and it was very almost, you know, opposite to how things were on the Sunshine Coast. But as I grew up, my brothers, like, you know, they sort of, like, Seb was top five in the world on the World Longboarding Series, and Bart was Australian longboarding champion. And like then when I was like 15, the World Longboarding Tour fell apart, the Oxbow World Tour just died. And at that time I was longboarding, shortboarding, like, you know, I was sponsored for both. I competed on both, Aussie longboard champion. But then when I watched my brothers, when that opportunity disappeared and they couldn't make any money, like they went and started selling longboards for their surfboard shaper from the Gold Coast, Napapa longboards. Well, one brother went and was quality controller in China for surfboards, and the other brother went and drove the west coast of California selling longboards out of a Dodge van. And I realized that longboarding was not gonna pay back my parents' time and effort that they'd put in, and I went the shortboard route. So it was just kind of I wasn't the kid that grew up going, I'm gonna be Kelly Slater something like that. Just wasn't something that I grew up on that trajectory and on that. You know, I wasn't hell-bent on being a top-level competitive shortboarder. It just, the opportunity came about. I had a very flexible upbringing. I skated, rode dirt bikes, BMX, longboard, shortboard, boogie board. I had, like, proper boogie board fins and a sick moray boogie board that I proper boogie board on. Like, I just, yeah.
Yeah. But that, it's interesting about your brothers, sort of their sort of career got wiped out, and then, yeah, they're working, just trying to make a living out, and then you saw the fact that you might be able to forge a career. But was there any pressure on you? I know, or did you put pressure on yourself to sort of be the sort of almost the money winner of the family? Was that ever an issue that you put on yourself? Or, you know, because I think that might have been quite a bit of pressure to put on a 16, 17-year-old kid. Not that it probably came from them, but was that a thing? Was that something that weighed on your mind and your shoulders?
I think that was absolutely my deciding factor to pursue a shortboarding career. It was around 15. It was right around when I did my first proper shortboard trip with the second Young Guns movie, but my first like proper international surf shortboard trip. And my everything was just like trying to make some money for the family. My dad worked his butt off. He laid tiles from when he was 16 till he was, you know, through to when he was 64, but he's laid tiles 5-6 days a week. And mum was a stay-at-home mum, drove us around, gave us all the opportunities that we could have ever dreamed for. And even from like a super young age, like mum went through her illness, like with breast cancer. And yeah, we never had like any extra money or, you know, it just wasn't, you know, it never held us back, but my dad worked extremely hard and didn't make, you know, great money. And from such a young age, it was just, yeah, I just wanted to be able to like make money for the family. I wanted to keep the house that we grew up in. That was from a very young age, was super important to me. Like, it was the financial thing.
But that sounds like a lot of pressure on it. That sounds like a lot of pressure on a young kid. I don't know if you're still only young now, but to have that kind of, to that sort of responsibility almost. The youngest family sounds like a bit of a, you know, it's not an easy thing to carry around, I'd imagine.
Yeah, for sure. And it was something that was never talked about. It was never like, it was probably the last thing that anyone in the family ever wanted me to feel, or they, you know, it was never spoken about. But it was just how we lived. And I just knew it. I pretty much knew right when that opportunity stopped for the boys, my brothers, with the longboarding. And they were making a bit of money, and there was a bit of prize money on that tour. And when that stopped, it was just like, clear as day for me to just go the shortboarding route. And then I actually, that's sort of when like my competitive shortboard career sort of really started, like started doing Rusty Gromfest at Lennox and like going to the Goldie for the Oki Grom comp and like meeting Jody Smith at D-Bar and getting destroyed by him surfing heats at off the wall at D-Bar. And like, yeah, it was just, there was, but that was what I had to do. I felt like to make a career out of surfing and like do what, you know, was the dream for my family, I guess. We just grew up at the beach. My dad surfed, mum surfed. Like if you could have a life where you just surfed for a living, that was the dream.
Yeah, well, do you think, and you achieved that, didn't you, mate? Like, you know, now you've retired from it. I assume that you've done enough to, I mean, your brother's still your manager, so he's still involved in the little family business that is Wilson Enterprises. But have you been able to park that a bit and think, okay, well, I know you still got your mum and dad to look after, but is it something that's still there? Yeah. Is that still an issue you've got, or you think you've done enough?
No, I mean, that's what I'm most proud of, definitely, just from my career. It's just, you know, my parents are still in the same house and my brother's close by. You know, he's in a house that I own as well that he rents, to, you know, and he's close to my parents, and we're a very tight-knit family, and they've supported me amazingly through my career, but I feel like my greatest achievement is being able to have a family that you know, I guess felt like they were a part of my journey as well, and they were they knew sort of the whole time how much, you know, that meant to me, and that any sort of, you know, as I achieved some cool stuff through my career, it was always like such a huge, the driving force came from the family, and that's why I was doing it, making the sacrifices. But I've definitely learned now, having two little ones and being married, my immediate family is obviously my number one focus, and the responsibility of, you know, looking after my family back up in Coolum, that's definitely changed quite a lot. But being able to, through the success of my career, being able to, you know, really sort of give back to my family and support them, and now I'm able to support a family of my own, so I've been extremely lucky through the success of my career.
Yeah, good. And as this is for Beach Grit, I'm going to swerve tack a little bit, but they love a legal yarn, and I do remember I was looking up your contract with Hurley, and I knew. I think you sued them, but I haven't heard anything else. I don't know if you're allowed to talk or what the situation is with that, but how did that all end up in the end, mate, just contractually with that early suing them and stuff? Did that get sorted out in the end with you?
Yeah, it got sorted out in the end. I can't say too much about it, but I had a year left on my contract when Nike sold Hurley to Blue Star Alliance, the New York based company. And yeah, just was a really tough one for me. They came in and kind of cleared out every single person at Hurley that I knew and had been working with for a long time. The Hurley family, Bob's brother, his boys, everyone got the flick, and it was a bummer. I was so proud of representing Hurley for such a long time, and it meant a lot to me, and then it kind of got pulled apart, and they didn't really have a plan going forward, and you know, that I was comfortable with, and I was really unsure of of what that 12 months is going to look like. And so yeah, I stepped away from what felt like a wrecking ball at the time.
Yeah. And all right. And did the other athletes, did they all get behind you when you made that decision to take them to court or go the legal route? Or did you just go out on your own and think, I'm doing what's right for you?
I had a year left on my contract and an agreement couldn't be made. Obviously it was COVID was just coming into effect at that time as well. But yeah, even the team was at that time was everyone was dropping off and things were going off. You know, John left, Caruso got the flick for yeah, there was just a lot of stuff going on, and there was no agreement made that could be made for that 12 months that was left on my contract. And yeah, that was
that done.
That was it.
And what's the go with the new Rivia? I see the little hoodie for the benefit of the listeners at home. You're wearing the rocking the Rivia hoodie, and that's your label, is that?
Yeah, this is my brand that I've been working on for the last 11 months. It's called Rivia Projects. The name comes from my two kids. I've got a River and I've got an Olivia. She gets Via and Riv gets Riv. That's where the name comes from. And it's a surf men's activewear brand that's influenced by my hobbies.
Are you the boss? How many you got? Who's the little crew? How's it going?
Yeah.
What type of boss are you?
There's a small group of us. My brother's involved, actually has a piece of the company. And then Jamal Gray, who is a longtime family friend of mine, who, you know, he came to me with the opportunity.
He's got some bit of work behind him, hasn't he, Jamal?
Got some runs on the board. Yeah, growing up at First Point Noosa, I used to steal his Al Byrne channel bottom shorties out of the garden when he'd be having his lunch and go out and catch a couple of waves at First Point. So, yeah, known Jamal and Turtle and the family for a long time, and he sort of went the route of rhythm and rip curl and a lot of work in the industry, and now we're working together to do Revere projects. And yeah,
and how is it working? Just doing I hate to say the word proper job, but coming from pro surfer to starting a brand, that's a lot of hard work and can be quite dull, I'd imagine, in between the exciting parts of it.
It's actually complemented my decision extremely well. It's motivated me massively to keep surfing and creating content and still competing a little bit. Go to the US Open at the end of the month and did a couple already this year. And it's actually like it's a bit of a grind at times, and I've learned a lot of new stuff and the ins and outs of the engine that, you know, gets a company going. And I've probably found even, you know, a new appreciation for the position that I've been in for a long time and the amazing support that I've had from great companies. But I really enjoy learning what goes into it and having final say on how it looks and feels and how we present it. And it's all new. So, you know, we just started selling product 2 weeks ago for the first time. So that was a huge milestone. And we basically sold out everything for Australia and New Zealand. And then America's doing pretty well as well off our first go. So some good feedback. But yeah, I'm enjoying it, working with some great a great group of people. We you know, we're just in it for we don't have anyone investing any great amount of money or pressure or anything. We get to do it creatively and have fun, and it's been a great focus for me, and yeah.
And where's you surfing at, mate? I'll let you go. I know you got some young kids, some sick kids, but what? Where's you surfing at? Like, you haven't gone the full Kersey twin fin, full alternative craft hipster. Is that, you know, is that happening? And they all these pro surfers seem to actually see the light after riding those thrusters for so many years, and you being a longboard boogie boarder at heart.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Depends on the day. Depends on the swell. But I went when I stepped back after the Olympics from full time competition, I was just like longboarding, twin fin. MR made me a couple of boards. He's just down the street, which is amazing. And just switched off for like 8 months, 7 months, and just surfed and no pressure on my sessions. And I did really enjoy it. And then Snapper came around to do the Challenger, and I've been back on a thruster for like 4 months straight now. And I've actually been really enjoying it. It's been really fresh, and been enjoying filming, and been enjoying chasing waves and like trying to fine tune my high performance surfing again, which is where I've spent so much time for the last 15 years, just trying to get those small margins of getting better. So I'm thrustering it at the moment.
As a world longboard, you get that world title on the longboard, mate. If that was always the Wilson goal, mate, that's still out there. I like to see Jules on that.
Still out there. Yeah, I might do a longboard contest one day for sure. If the kids become, you know, I definitely would love to introduce the kids to surfing through longboarding the way I was, and maybe, you know, might enter a longboarding event then.
You heard it here first. Julian, you imagine Beach Kit, that'd be like Julian Wilson going for world longboard title. But, well, mate, thanks again, really, for your time. Appreciate it. Sounds like you're pretty happy in a little loft up there in Newey, and nice taking a pleasurable path. I think you may have earned it.
Thanks,
happy
Mundy.
With your lot.
Yeah, appreciate that, Mundy. Thanks for your time. And yeah, I'll just be around if you want to check in anytime.
I don't go up to Merriweather much if I can help it. My mum and dad have moved into town, mate. So they moved from Redhead into right on.
Oh home. Yeah.
Yeah, they sold the family home. I thought they might get cash coming Mundy's way, but they invested in a 7th story of a penthouse apartment right in town. So fair play to them. So they're living in a room in town, mate. So I'm a townie now, so I'll come and stay.
Yeah, okay.
I'll come and say good day.
You can come and help me get a couple of waves.
Yeah, mate. I think my pull is somewhat dwindled, but I'll do my best. Carolyn's your best bet.
Yeah. But even he's a road hog like Craig. They just hit the road every time a swell pops up. But that's the beauty of this place too, though. You go north and south and you just open up so many options for good waves.
Yeah. Well, get amongst it, mate. And as ever, enjoy it. And, I'll see you soon. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, man. Cheers, mate. See ya.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save big money.